Yeah. Five killers arise from graves. The within, they shed the dead weight of morals and sins. Said loose by Zeus, the space time, and lead the murderous horde known as Experience Grind.
Hey there, grinders. Welcome to the Experience Grind podcast, the show about getting old and the experiences that we've gained along the way through movies, culture, or just doing whatever the fuck it is that we're doing. You experience stuff, am I right? Being friends with people and they don't know that you're friends with them. Like, those are experiences. But I'm not alone. I am joined this week with three of my friends, question mark? And I'm here to introduce them to you. Ryan, will you ever see your son graduate?
Nah. I mean, actually, no, I say that, but the best friend in life you can have is your son. He's your best pal. That's all you ever need in life is a son.
Mm. Is that true for you?
Yeah. If that was directed at me, yeah. Then yes. Okay.
I'm at more Ryan.
That's what I was like. No. Spoilers. No.
That voice was Kyle. And Kyle, will you ever orgasm again?
Oh, yeah, in the sewers for sure.
That just sounds like the turtles intended.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's the where secret of the ooze. Puts their babies.
Oh. Yeah.
Kyle Juice. Yeah. Nice. And last up, fresh out of breaking into his neighbor's house to do their dishes, it's Brian. What's going on, man?
You know, I feel like one of the Webster's dictionary defines friendship as the state of being friends. And what is a friend if not somebody who does your dishes for you when you're not home and then steals your gun while your wife's asleep in the room?
If it's something as innocent as doing the dishes, do you really need their consent to enter their house?
No, hop a fence and do. Honestly, if any of my friends listening want to hop my fence and do my dishes, you are more than welcome.
Come with the prerequisite of them having had fallen through your door prior so that it's open anyways?
Like, I mean, it does make it easier.
Making their own entrance. I feel like if they were a vampire, they were given explicit confirmation and the go-ahead to just enter at any time at that point. You didn't even put a new door in. That's basic. Right. This is a slippery slope that I'm going to get off of really quickly.
It's a well-strung. You said on the podcast that if your door was broken, I could come in.
Oh, no. I've made mistakes. Guys, I've joined you with me. We have formed a Zord, apparently. Who's my arm?
You're probably wondering why I've gathered you all here today.
Crazy enough, I'm not wondering because I know, but are you two? Anyways, we're talking about friendship. This Tim Robinson movie, if you've ever heard of him, and Paul Rudd, who is no stranger to, you know, friend movies.
Speaking of vampires, Paul Rudd.
Yes, exactly. Which is weird because it was his house Are people just able to enter vampire houses? Like, shouldn't they set up something in the opposite direction to keep people out?
Yeah, I don't know that it goes both ways.
It should, though. They are magical.
I don't think vampires care much about consent and, like, making things equal.
yeah, but, like, consent on, like, things happening towards them.
Well, they're immortal, right?
Well, yeah.
Permission to enter a house, they do need that much consent.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I'm just saying it should be equal, if not more, going the opposite way.
Vampire's house.
What if you're a vampire visiting your vampire buddy's house?
Also,
do you need permission?
I feel every vampire hunter enters a vampire house without their permission.
Yeah, which is why it's fucked up.
Right.
It is a fatal flaw.
Yeah.
Hmm. Man, now I'm going to think about that every time I watch a vampire movie and I just see a vampire show up in somebody else's house. And I'm like, hold on there, Dracula. Get the fuck out. Anyway. Well,
vampire hunting is actually like surprisingly not very cool. Also, if you think about it, because you're right. They're just like sneaking around while somebody's asleep and then stabbing them in their sleep like a fucking coward. Vampire hunters are little bitches. I think they're little bitches.
They're basically glorified like rat catchers.
Glorified rats? Yeah. I think that's what happened with OJ. OJ was a vampire hunter and he just got it wrong. Huh. It happens to the best of them.
Yeah.
Do you think that the bat was wearing the gloves?
Orenthal does sound like a vampire hunter name.
Right?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. God, that's damn. A Chronicles fun conspiracy of Orenthal. Theory. OJ was the original Blade. He's who Blade was based on.
He got it wrong. He got it wrong.
Yo. Yo.
Which makes his athletic ability even more believable.
Of this episode about Friendship, the movie.
Well, as we'll get into, the title's very misleading. Am I the only one that has literally never watched something with Tim Robinson in it?
Mm-hmm. I think so, yes.
You must be.
I love this man.
Who I can only imagine what kind of introduction this was.
Wow, yeah, well done. What'd you say, Sean?
I asked if I was the only person that had ever not seen something of his, and then followed up with, in the history of ever. Because I feel like any time he comes up, everybody just talks to me as if he's like Eddie Murphy, and you've seen something with it, you've seen The Clumps or something, and it's like, no, not everybody's seen The Clumps. I haven't seen The Clumps. Nutty Professor, though. I was at the drive-in for that. But yeah, this was a very interesting introduction to this, and how everybody talks about him, I wasn't entirely surprised at the like the humor and the darkness and stuff in it, but I cannot say that on the same hand that I was prepared.
Nothing prepared or equipped for Tim Robinson.
Yeah, uh-huh. I feel like nothing does. So without further ado, I'm just going to break this down for the listeners and we can get into our breaking down further in our categories.
I just want to break you down so badly.
That was in this movie, right?
I don't think it was.
It would have fit in this movie at some point.
It would have.
It was the punk music he was listening to, except he doesn't understand what punk is.
No. Slipknot.
This makes me so sick. Yeah, right? Oh my God. It could be more punk. So anyways, Friendship is a wonderful story about a mailman who just cannot figure out how to do their job correctly and consistently. But we've all been there, right? Only kidding. But maybe not. The mail person definitely plays a hand in the story that is to unfold. We follow Craig, a digital project manager who is a bit socially awkward and tends to really only think about himself. But enough about Craig. He has a wife, Tammy, who is a cancer survivor, distracting herself in her day-to-day with her flower business and desperately needs a bigger car. His son, Steven, a 16-year-old student with 17 girlfriends who sees Marvel movies without him. And his neighbor, Austin, who is a weatherman punk rocker whose mail keeps getting delivered to Craig's house. I know I said enough about Craig, but believe me when I say that this is all about Craig. Craig meets Austin one afternoon while dropping off one of the aforementioned packages, and they immediately hit it off. They go on adventures and break into town halls via sewers. Crazy stuff. But one night, it all comes crumbling down. In the aftermath of a night gone awry meeting Austin's friends, Austin breaks up with him. And that is just the first domino to fall. What ensues is a man grasping on and clinging with desperation to someone who has moved on while being unable to reason with why everything has happened. So he does the reasonable thing and breaks into Austin's house when delivering another package and steals a sweet-ass golden gun that Bond would be proud of. And, push comes to shove. He tries to make other friends, gets mad at some Marvel spoiling.
That's a solid basis for not being friends.
That is a solid basis to fly off your seat. But with all this spiraling, Craig is unable to see that he is also losing Tammy. I'm sure he could have heard that he was losing her, but he doesn't listen to her. So in a last-ditch effort to take control of some situation, he attempts to invoke guilt Tammy into a DSKY, do something new year, adventure, and promptly loses her in the sewer. I think that I can talk for all of us when I say that the orgasm that she had in the sewer was probably the best thing that could have happened to her, right? Because she leaves his ass. And Craig takes this well naturally and threatens to beat the shit out of the mayor and then loses his job. Honestly, guys, you really... You guys have to see. You have to see this to understand. But not all is lost. He focuses on bonding with Steven and giving everyone their space. The movie ends with a nice reunion for Steven's birthday and Craig having bought Tammy a new van and nothing else at all bad happening in the slightest. Not at all. Nope. Everything is happy and fine. Depending on, you know, what reality you're living in. But I'll leave it there. I'm sure we will break down what actually happens at the end through one of these categories. That is, yeah. Let's start with story. Gotta start with story here. And I feel like I am not the most well-equipped to start this off. But I do want to hear from Ryan.
Okay. Well, all right. Story is going to include the script and dialogue as well. This is an interesting one. I think the story is fine. It's not really much of a story because it doesn't have to be. It is a very basic setup for a bunch of uncomfortable scenes thanks to Tim Robinson's very specific type of humor. And I think as a just basic setup, it really works. But I also don't think there's anything here story-wise like really be over the moon with. But if we are counting the dialogue in the way that we have the dialogue in, I do think there's something to the dialogue. I think it's really sharp. If you're a fan of Robinson and his humor, it's here in full force. I think there's maybe more to talk about when we get to like the style and tone and if that necessarily all gels together in this kind of movie around it. But I think the story is good. It's solid. And I will even give them more credit for attempting like some broader themes and like bringing in like kind of this male loneliness stuff, this kind of neglectful husband. Like they don't make it a clear cut case of just like a friendship thing. There's so much to Tim Robinson's character that if you break down any of this, there's, I think, commentary being said about this type of person in a real life scenario. I think this is a very specific, sharp look at a very, not necessarily out and out bad person, but a very troubled person who is going to end up doing harm to themselves because they cannot just get out of their way. I love how this film plays with a lot of things, but I think it's ultimately pretty sharp. I think I'm going to go with 4. I think just a straight, solid 4. I think this is really solid.
Actually, you get to toss it to where you want it to go.
Follow with Brian.
I'm in agreement with you. There's a very light premise happening here, but it's mostly a vehicle for Tim Robinson's humor and the relationship between him and all of the other characters. And it's interesting because you see him develop a relationship with his son and with his wife over the course of the movie. And he tries, but mostly he's focused on this relationship with Paul Rudd's character. And he really wants just to have this friendship. He's obsessed with him for whatever reason. He thinks he's just like the coolest guy. And it's just, it's a very, very simple story, but it's a, if you've seen a Tim Robinson sketch, the brilliance of this movie is that it's like, they take what's normally done in 2 minutes and stretch it to a feature-length film. Because a Tim Robinson sketch is generally only funny for as long as it's on, and they're usually capped out at about 5 minutes. And that's when the shtick gets old. But they found a way to do a long-form thing with one of his characters, and that's, I think that's the actual brilliance of this movie. For me, it's also a 4.
Well said. I'm sticking with the formula that we've been doing for the last couple weeks. So whenever somebody finishes, just send it to who you want to hear from.
Well, then, Sean, I think it's your turn.
All right. I think Ryan really nailed it off in the beginning with what he had said. But also, like, stories, you said stories don't have to be complex. And what I think that is so fascinating about this story and what is done so well is how real it is. Now, this isn't in your day-to-day real, like, not everybody knows somebody like Craig. A lot of people do, but not everybody does. And to the severity of where Craig is at, okay, that, you know, it's scary if you do. You know, I would imagine, right? And I think that this being a story of one of the worst times in Craig's life is just, it's so fascinating, and it's such a crazy trip. And it really is just like a snippet out of his life. And just like, it could just be a short anecdote that you could tell really quick to somebody that is just fleshed out over an hour and a half. And I think the writing was just so well done. So well done, and so fully realized the character of Craig, down to, like, you have Tammy missing in the sewer, and you've got Steven watching the TV with one of his girlfriends, and it's on, this was right afterwards when she's, I think, on the news, whatever. And it cuts to commercial, and instead of saying anything, he's like, oh, I love this commercial. He's so funny. It's like, dude is so detached from anything, and he's just so fully realized. But I guess that's, we can talk more about that in character. But I'm going to also give this a 4. Like, this was, and that would be a strong 4 at that for me. So I guess that leaves Kyle.
I like to always come with alternate titles for the movies. I called this one Crash Out the Movie. All Craig does is just crash out in more extreme ways every time. But something I can relate to. It happens to the best of us. Sometimes you just get overwhelmed, and goddamn it, you just want to kick everybody out of your fucking house.
And lick a toad.
You mentioned, I don't know. I think I'd argue, I think everybody has at least known somebody at this level of socially awkward. And if you haven't, I got some bad news for you, pal. I've known many people that just, it's people that, like, they're good intentioned, but for whatever reason, they just can't read the most basic social cues. Whether it be anxiety, as it seems to mostly be in Craig's place, he just continuously this was like a real life Mr. Bean. Like, he just continuously made things worse through his own ineptitude and befuddlement, and yet it just got darker, whereas Mr. Bean is more lighthearted. But that said, as with most comedy movies, you guys all mentioned, like, the meat and potatoes is not here in the story. I do think it was an interesting twist that the wife gets lost and for seemingly like a day. And I love that she comes back and he asks her what tea the son made her. Again, showing just his inability to actually grasp what is wrong and what is really happening. I came in out of three on this, but you guys have made some compelling arguments. So I think I'll go with a low four. I will bump up a bit. Because it is bare bones, but you've made some good arguments, and so yeah, we'll go with a four. I'm comfortable with that.
I love that. And you just said, I'm actually going to kick off characters because you just said something that made me realize something. So I had typed out that whole intro thing and talked about it. And at some point I said, couldn't quite grasp why everything was happening. And you had just mentioned he couldn't quite grasp the severity or whatever was happening. And like, I posit, like, it's not even that. It's because it has nothing to do with him. So he doesn't care. He doesn't listen to it. Because it's somebody else, it is irrelevant, which is why, like, it's not that he's not listening to her. He just doesn't care. And I think the way that they fleshed out all of these characters, and I feel like Paul Rudd's Austin is just portrayed in such a great way, such a realistic way. And Kyle, you said something about comparing it to Mr. Bean. Like, this is just, I feel like, the most realistic series of events. Like, this shit happens. You're not getting that happy ending at the end. Like, you are going to continue to unravel. Like, this is what happens. Like, if you can't save yourself from this spiral, you are just going to dig deeper and deeper and deeper. But the realization of all of the characters was so great. I loved all of Austin's friends. They were so funny. And that random Patton, that veteran that just like finds him in the garage and talks to him a couple.
With the drums, yeah.
Yeah, and just compliments his drugs. Yeah. He was fantastic. That dude, that made me laugh so hard. He turned like a 180. Like, holy shit, where did this come from? I thought the characters, all of that, I thought it was all a five here. I thought it was above and beyond. Like, it was incredible. And Kyle, I want to hear, let's flip it in reverse.
Let me see. Characters, absolutely. You brought up the realism. That's one of my favorite aspects of this movie, is just how based in reality it is. I think that's one of my favorite aspects of comedy, like the subtle absurdity of real life. This guy's a weird neighbor. You could very well likely get stuck with that weird neighbor. I've honestly thought the way Paul Rudd handled it was the most mature and like balanced way you could have done it. And it didn't matter because for whatever reason, Craig is just that level of unhinged. And I like that aspect too. Like, you could be a completely normal guy in every aspect. And then for whatever reason, I guess something could just trip you up. I don't know. I really enjoyed so much of this, like the physical comedy. It comes out of nowhere, dude. When he answers a work call when he's in the middle of breaking into the house and it's like a group call and he has to like keep talking, just fantastic. If you like cringe humor, this is like the most refined, it's like you go to a French restaurant and they give you the essence of a steak dinner and it's like this weird bubble. That's what this is. This is like the essence of cringe humor spread out to an hour and 40 minutes, which... something I fucking love, and something that he nails. Paul Rudd is fantastic as the flawed weatherman that is also bald and hiding that, and that explains like so much when that reveal happens. And the way, of course, Paul Rudd is fantastic. What's the wife? I can't think of her name off the top of my head. Kate Mara. I love her and everything. She's got just, again, the inattentive, distant wife, I don't know, played perfectly. The kid from Stranger Things. Everybody nails everything in here.
No. Not from Stranger Things. Nope.
Yeah, he was Eddie in It.
He's from Shazam.
Oh.
And Shazam.
Yeah, Shazam. Why did I think he was
Shazam in It?
Well, he's a good kid actor. He's pretty great in this too. I knew I'd recognized him from somewhere. But anyways,
it was it. That's why. That's
a very long roundabout way to say I'm with Sean, a full five here. I love how fleshed out everybody is, especially for a comedy movie that verges onto black comedy as well, and just dark humor in general. But also, it would definitely get the five bump too, because my homeboy John Glazer is in this as well. So, who you know is Jeremy Jam, if you've ever watched.
He got jammed!
The life... The human equivalent of gas station sushi. Councilman Dan.
He's also, I loved his short-lived Adult Swim show, Delocated. It's one of my favorite shows of all time. And most people should watch Delocated. But yeah, five. Hands down, fantastic. Ryan, take it away. That's with an R.
Boy, I was going to come in already positive. But now after you two giving such glowing fives, I think I'm gonna be the negative one on this one, and I didn't want to be. I like the characters a lot here, but I think I maybe have more qualms than you two do. I think the cast is fantastic. I love a lot of the cast here. I love that they bring in some of the smaller I Think You Should Leave players here. Like, that's Connor O'Malley. Sean, if you like Connor O'Malley, please watch I Think You Should Leave. He gets like on many Netflix bit parts in there. He's so fun.
Dude, that dude's hilarious.
He's good. He's funny.
Funny.
The Tony T-Boy is a really fun small character who feels so fucking real. Like, we all know this kid, or we maybe used to at one point know this kid.
I love you, Toad Boy.
Allegedly, T-Boy. I'm very positive all around for the most part. That said, I do think I have some negatives that nobody else brought up, which is I think, for Tim Robinson, he just played Tim Robinson character. I don't think he did anything new or different. He just did what he does in the sketch show, but like for an hour and 40 minutes instead of like these 5 minute hits. I think he's good enough. I don't think he's a great actor. He's fine. But when put next to Kate Mara and Paul Rudd, I think it's a little bit noticeable. And it's fine. It doesn't have to be. It's a comedy. But I do think there is a little bit of like what you're praising about this character and how, like, I think at one point he says, like, there are rules. You have to follow the rules. This is a character, and all of his characters are characters that don't understand how to properly navigate societal rules, societal norms. And this is just another one of those characters. So as much as I think this is a he does well with it, but it feels like kind of like just a base hit, and like I think you could maybe push yourself and do something more, Tim Robinson. That's it. Not again super negative. And then like Paul Rudd too is like,
and a bonus point for characters.
Speaking of maybe like a little bit uninspired, Paul Rudd's the charming weatherman. Do we see this in the Anchorman movies? Yeah, except now he's bald. Which, I do really like that, and that's why I would give the bump up in story, because I think that's a very clever storytelling touch to not make these characters, like, two just satirical little characters, like, one-dimensional things to make comedy and make points. Like, when Tim Robinson promises Paul Rudd to never, ever share that secret, he keeps it, even when you think he's going to do it, and that almost feels like the crux of the movie to me. And it makes that like little eye wink at the end so much more fucking impactful. For me, Paul Rudd's eye wink at the end of this movie is like the silent whisper in Lost in Translation. I think it's that fucking powerful. So I don't know. I'm all over the place, but I am a little bit more negative. So I think I'm going to be a very strong four. But I did kind of want to see a little bit something more from Tim Robinson than just like more Tim Robinson, which, don't get me wrong, I want more Tim Robinson, but I want more Tim Robinson. That is so fucking entitled.
I think I know what you're saying.
High four.
I know what you're saying, because, oh yeah, go ahead. I see what you're saying, because like, do we do it again? Yes.
You guys, stop meat cuting on the podcast.
Oh.
I take three paces and shoot, Brian.
Well, I take two and a half.
I can tell. You son of a bitch. Fine. I think what you said too about that promise, I love that Paul Rudd's Austin is also not like above, like he kind of realizes what's going on there and manipulates the situation. Like he is not an innocent character at all in this movie in any regards. But I thought that was a really nice touch at all. And I had mentioned to Ryan prior to recording, I don't even know if that wink was real. Like, what is even real in this movie? I don't know.
That's a good question. Even
2 seconds before that, I was led to thinking, wait, was that whole movie just like in his head, his nerves about going and meeting his friends, and it turned out that everything was fine? No. He fucking took them all hostage with a gun. This is a cop car. There we go, folks. We got to the ending.
We did it.
Ryan. Back to what you're saying about Ryan's comment.
Yeah, no, I agree with all of you guys about this. I think a lot of these characters are extremely well fleshed out and very realistic. Like, even like the golden character that is like the very thing that Tim Robinson wants most in this movie is flawed. He gets this job that he wants. He doesn't like it. And he blames Tim Robinson's character, Craig, in a certain amount for inspiring him to get the job. And it's just, it's very interesting because, like, even in the first scene of the movie, they paint Tammy. I mean, we immediately find out that she's a cancer survivor because they're in a group therapy session. But she's sitting right next to her husband saying she doesn't know if she's ever going to have an orgasm again. So you're like, immediately you're like, I don't know whose side I'm on yet.
And then it goes to him and he goes, hey guys, I'm orgasming just fine.
Like, I agree, I know with
whose
Ryan.
Side I'm on.
I agree with Ryan that, like, yes, this is Tim Robinson just doing Tim Robinson. There's some nuance to it, though. I mean, I feel like there are moments where he's kind of playing it straight, which is not something you see very often for Tim Robinson. But I agree that I wanted to see him go the next step up, go to the next level, and give us something that we haven't seen from him before. But what I do like, and I hinted at it earlier when we talked about the story, the character arcs, I think he only pays attention to the relationships that are serving him in the moment, and then he ignores them until they reach a point where it's going to be detrimental to his existence. He's focusing all of his energy on this relationship with Austin. And he's losing his wife. And then he's like, oh no, I got to do something to make sure she doesn't actually leave because that's going to fuck everything up. Loses her in the caves. And then doesn't really try to find her again because there's a party happening at Austin's house. And he's like, well, I got to find out if I'm still cool with all the guys or not. Until the police show up and it's like, oh, hey, you broke into his house. And the whole thing is, it's messy. And he eventually, you see him start to come around, and he's like, he's hanging out with his son. He's doing stuff for his wife. He's ignoring Austin for the latter half, the latter part of the movie. And, you know, he sends his son over to deliver a package that gets misdelivered. But it's when he sees that fucking car, that yellow Corvette in the driveway, that he gets so angry because he remembers that he promised him he'd have the first ride in that car if he ever got it, thanks to Tim Robinson's character, Craig, inspiring him to go for the job so he could actually get his dream car. And that's when he just throws it all away. And you're like, oh no, there's no growth here. But then, while he's holding the whole party hostage and accidentally fires the gun, the toupee comes off of Austin, and then he does something for somebody else. He extends the hostage situation unnecessarily, because he was done. He was given up. He'd thrown in the towel until the gun accidentally went off. And now he's protecting his quote-unquote friend to the level of he's going to go to jail now. And it's the first time he does something for somebody else in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a self-serving act. So, like, it seems like there's no character growth because it all gets blown up at the end when he goes back to this party. But then he has that tiny, tiny little bit of character growth And yeah, I agree. The wing. All that to say, it's a five, guys. It's a five.
It is so absurd. That entire section with the gun and the wig falling off and him just like gesturing at his head, giving him the thumbs up. Your wig. Like, it is.
It's so obscene.
It is so acid dream. It's wild. Everybody, wonderful, wonderful points on there. I'm glad that I don't have any experience with Tim Robinson, just so it, like, I didn't have that issue, I think, that Ryan had, that he wanted more from it. So I feel like this is a pretty good entry point to then be able to go in and see some of these other things that are going on.
It's also tough to outdo things like Cough and Flop.
Is Cough that flop, one of all-time the greatest sketch?
I don't know how you ever
Cough and Flop? That's wild.
Dude, are you kidding? Corncob TV.
Corncob TV. I almost died laughing because I couldn't inhale.
It's so good. And just the thought that goes into that sketch, like, how many coffins are you doing this for? He had to do this dozens and dozens of times and filmed it. And just that thought alone makes me so fucking happy. Let alone, like, the joy I get to seeing them bodies flop out of the coffins. They're not rigged. God damn it. We didn't do this. This is not staged. They called me a hick to my face.
This guy, just like talking about him and the sketches and this movie in general, it feels like an extension of last week's infomercial episode, where it's just like, it's a constantly, but wait, there's more. And I feel like that really embraces, really leads to the tone of this movie. Because whenever you feel like it can't get much worse, but wait, there's more.
But wait.
Yeah. So we're going to swerve a little bit here into talking about, style, tone, music, more of the directional style things about this movie. And I would love to start with Brian on this one. What are you thinking here on style, tone, with the B? Yeah. Yeah.
B or R?
B.
Gotcha.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
This is interesting because you have two tonally different things happening here. You have a very serious story about a very scary man being played by a very funny, awkward individual. And it's weird because it's like, I heard about this movie, Friendship. It's about a movie about two guys who are friends. Paul Rudd's in it, just like in I Love You, Man. Oh, by the way, it's an A24 film. I'm sorry, what now? Okay, I'm interested. This is going to be dark and weird, but it's also going to be Tim Robinson-y. And that's a combination that absolutely should not work. It's insanely fascinating how they, I almost said pulled it off, because it's still hard to say if they did pull it off. It's
she doesn't agree.
Yeah, apparently I got under Siri's feathers there. It's shot like an A24 film, but it has the subject matter of I Think You Should Leave, and that is tonally dissonant in a way that's very interesting. And I really enjoyed it. And I mean, you throw in things like genre. This is definitely a black comedy. There's no getting around that. It's not comedy, because there are the thriller, horror, psychological aspects to it. Even though they are definitely a backseat to the comedy, they're there. I also think the music was pretty excellent. I like that they were using Slipknot as a punk band, even though Kindness is the new punk rock, I believe, we determined with Superman.
Mm-hmm.
Goddamn right.
It's a very... I'm having a hard time. I'm rambling because I don't know if I want to give this a four or a five, and I think I have to go with a four.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I want to hear what Ryan has to say.
I think I'm really right there with you. I'm very conflicted. As you said, this is equal parts I think you should leave, but then equal parts swim fan or fear or something. Yes. And it's a really weird combination. And
single white female.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or what's the fucking Glenn Close one with Michael Douglas and the rabbit? Fatal Attraction. These movies have existed. This is not necessarily anything new, but to put Tim Robinson in it and then not change Tim Robinson definitely makes it feel new. It makes it feel different. And I think where I'm at, I think I'm with Brian. I think I'm going to go a 4, but I do think what happens here, this is going to be a 4 for this podcast and for us. Or whatever we go to, I think you step out of this podcast and you're going to hear a lot of very different things about this movie. Mm-hmm. I think the humor in I Think You Should Leave is already pretty specific. To then put it into like this very serious A24 movie then makes it in an even smaller Venn diagram circle. And I think even fewer people are going to be into this, but it hits me. So yeah. I'm with Brian. I think 4 is about perfect. I think it's really solid, but it's not going to hit for everybody. So just know it's a weird one.
This thing has a very specific target audience for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I think... Who did I see grimace more when I was speaking? Who has counter thoughts? I'm going to go with Sean. Oh, it was okay. Kyle. I chose incorrectly.
Ah, get wrecked. I think you're absolutely correct in that this has its audience. I thought it was fascinating when I was looking at some of the breakdowns, and everything's got an AI breakdown now. No matter where you go on IMDb, there's an AI, you know, it reads all of the submitter stuff and spits you back a small thing, gives you the pluses, minuses. And one of the things that was a minus was the discomfort that it causes. And you, dear reviewer, are not the audience for this, because that is precisely, like, if you're giving that a thumbs down because it made you uncomfortable, then it did it very well, because mm-hmm. that is the whole point of this. And boy howdy, I desperately wanted to look at my phone to get away from how uncomfortable I was. Like, to just have an escape from, like, several very tense, uncomfortable moments. And because it's, we said it before, like, it's very real, and sometimes very real and very uncomfortable can be very uncomfortable. So I think they absolutely nail the tone of this movie with what they're trying to do. Brian had said, you know, music was great, blah, blah, blah. I think the music was exceptional in the storytelling of this movie, where it starts very neutral in the beginning of the movie with just like a little bit of chanting going on. And then the movie shifts as Craig is trying to adopt all of these things that he thinks are cool or maybe the cool things to do. So like, he picks up sayings from Austin. He gets a fucking tiny little sword because Austin collects old stuff. You know, exactly. Be cautious. He starts listening to punk music. And so you start hearing that in the soundtrack. And then when everything kind of goes away and goes in the shitter and he has no control over anything anymore, he ends up at T-Boy's shop again, at the phone shop, buying his 17th phone. And it's just pop music.
Keeps dropping them.
He no longer has control, and so the pop just infiltrates back in. And I thought it did such a phenomenal job of just kind of telling you, just through music, where he is. It was fucking wild. I'm gonna go 4 as well, but the music and the choices really blew me away in this movie. So that leaves you, Kyle.
Well, here, and I'm sad to say, But you're all wrong. Because this deserves 1. Point higher from all of you. This is a 5.
None of us reacted that
time.
Can't
keep getting away with this.
Because I don't know. I might... This first description... No, I'll leave that for the end. One part I really love is how constantly throughout the movie, Craig is his own downfall. It's nobody else's fault. It is his own. To the point that even the climax of the movie is Craig's own downfall that he set up months or years in advance with his fight in City Hall to get the speed bumps installed that he plows into when he's driving to hit Austin's fancy car and breaks the car. The brand new van he just bought for his wife is like, it's such a beautiful crash out, man. But that, like, if I'm approaching this of the point of view that this is a long stretched out, I think you should leave Tim Robbins skit or whatever. It's absolutely a 5. It is 100%. I don't know how it was possible to stretch one of those out into this format. And they fucking nailed it to the point that I'm blown away. It was so fucking funny at times. Like, the amount that I laughed. The reason I love too, he's the reason of Austin's downfall when Austin starts to listen to his advice. And the whole basis of his advice, he wanted a bigger office so he could eat whatever weird shit he wanted. It wasn't to excel or to get farther in his career. He wanted to eat his lunch in private. That was it.
Dude.
And Austin follows this fucking wacko's advice.
That's maybe the truest thing in this fucking movie.
Yeah.
To get an office door so you can eat your smelly fucking food, your embarrassing food in private. That is so true. That's so real. I would also climb the ladder to get an office with a door. I don't care
but
about
Austin
the race.
Wants to do
I
it
want
for
that
different
door.
Reasons. Yeah,
I know.
That's why it fails for him because he follows the advice of this utter psychopath. I love that. When people follow his advice, it doesn't work out. He doesn't think his son should be dating two girls, but he is, and he seems fine and happy. You know, it's those things like nothing this guy does is correct. His presentation to the mayor is not right to the point that he fucking wants to kick his fucking ass.
We'll kick your fucking ass.
This will set up what I think of direction too, but I'm going to give it here. My favorite thing in this movie is this recurring motif, and this is why I'm giving it in style and why I give this a 5. Every time before Austin crashes out, there's a long camera hold. And it stays steady until Austin comes back and crashes out. And I love that. It doesn't, like, when he's arguing with the wife because she's going out to see Devin again.
Ooh.
And he keeps coming around the corner to look at her in the microwave and then finally commits it. When he goes to crash the car, he's leaving to go get the supplies she needs real quick. And it just stays on the house until the van comes back into frame. And you know. And I love that aspect of the storytelling. And it worked every time. It's subtle, great foreshadowing. Loved it. Brilliant. 5.
I'm going to switch up the formula a little here and just go straight into the direction and let you keep rolling with that.
Okay. Yeah, direction also 5, shockingly. Because again, the fact that they nailed this style of humor, we're able to stretch it out and it doesn't get boring. It doesn't get long in the tooth. The smaller vignettes stay just enough to keep you in the awkward phase, and then it gives you like the ginger roll to your sushi where it cleanses the palate. We get a more subtle thing that builds back up again. It's it's great. It's like the long eternal gooning edge. It keeps building you up to not let you get there.
That is a way of putting it.
Yeah, exactly. Direction though, also a 5 for me, and I want to kick it to my goon buddy Ryan.
No. How do you feel about that before you answer?
Can I pass it back because I'm not a goon buddy? Take that back. Take that back.
Return to sender. Package arrived at wrong house.
Come deliver to my door.
I'm not familiar with this director. I'm going to assume Andrew DeYoung has not done too much outside of this movie.
This is his feature film debut.
I would not be surprised if he was one of the directors on I Think He Should Leave and then adapted this into a big full thing, but I don't know. That's just a guess. I think the direction here is really good. Again, I'm not blown away. This is a very good-looking film. I agree with Kyle. There are some really smart choices. I do love the fact that they linger on Craig, so you can fully see him like make this choice, and you're stuck with him making this choice, and it is not just like a quick flippant like I'm losing it. Like, it makes it a conscious choice that he is doing every single time, and really puts like the nails to his character, and doesn't make him like just, as I've said before, like this one-dimensional kind of parody character. It does make it a little bit more weighty. So I think there's a lot of credit due to the director for being able to marry these tones. I think there's a lot of good here. I thought the look of this movie was mostly good. I don't know. I kind of felt like, I don't know. Five is something that blows me away with direction, like withholding something, like chopping up the movie in a way that's like super interesting. And I feel like this is just like really, really, really solid. And this is, I think, where I was not too long ago with some other things. But I think this is
Happy Gilmore.
This is done.
You bumped it up,
man. But I don't know. Happy Gilmore might be also about the same, because I do. Mm-hmm.
Happy Gilmore got a lot of credit for its budget.
For its budget and what you expect from a Happy Gilmore movie. They really put the work into making that look like something for the cost. I am still surprised by that. This is A24. Sadly, when I go to an A24 movie, and not sadly, like I expect state-of-the-art cinematography. Like, we are doing new boundary-pushing things. But then I also have to remember A24 did Dix the Musical, which is one of the worst fucking movies I've ever fucking seen, that has almost no artistic merit to it when it comes to cinematography or anything. This is not that bad. Shit, there was another A24 Paul Rudd movie this year, Death of a Unicorn. I like this much more than that one. Mm-hmm. But I want just a little bit more out of the direction. Just push some things a little bit more. I think this is a great first start. Honestly, this is where a lot of, I think, great directors' first movies would be. Like, you talk Tarantino, Reservoir Dogs isn't his best. It's not shot the best. It's not anywhere close to the best. I think this director could go in really great places. I just don't think they are there quite yet. So this is a very high 4 once again.
Nice. I just wanted to put in one thing.
Yeah.
I liked in the style and the direction to tie in. This, I like when a movie's shot in winter and it feels like winter, and this definitely achieves that. My favorite thing that this does, I love that it constantly shows dirty snow. I hate that movies, when they're afraid to show, they
sanitize their snow.
Yeah, I hate that. And this movie, it gives that realistic, lived-in feel. I don't even know if they're trying for that or if they just didn't care.
It's the low budget. Shot.
But yeah,
can
either
only
way,
afford dirty snow.
Loved it. So just wanted to add that.
Very nice. Very nice. To that, Sean, where do you stand on the direction?
Dirty snow. I stand in dirty snow. Low budget, dirty snow. Give it to me. Give me that brown snow cone. Ew. Yeah. Okay, everybody's scared of the yellow one. Who thinks about the brown? Okay. Anyways.
Could be lemonade. Could be.
Could be chocolate.
It could be chocolate. Yeah.
Pooper chocolate.
Like somebody pooper might chocolate. Have dropped their ice cream in the snow. Anyways. I thought that this was really well done. I don't know if I could have, I can't tell these things. Like, I can't tell if it's somebody's first outing unless it's just like really bad, you know? And this wasn't that. This wasn't bad. This was very good. It was very crisp. I thought the holding shots were fantastic. There was a lot of really great stylistic choices akin to like the holding shots. And I thought they were so well done of putting yourself into kind of not into his headspace, but like what? I don't quite know how to say it. But it was done great. I feel like, you know, a 3 might be low, 5's way too high. I'm between like a strong 3 or a low 4, but I'll go with a 4 on this. It wasn't blown away, but I thought it was very strong. Brian.
Yeah, I agree with what everybody's saying here, especially Dirty Snow and and yeah. What Ryan said about there's a certain expectation with A24 films. This is Andrew DeYoung's first feature film. He did a lot of TV before this. He did not do any I Think You Should Leave, though. He's done like episodes of Dave and Shrill, Miracle Workers, Pen 15, and then probably got
all right.
So, mixed up with yeah. this crew around the Pen 15, and I Love That For You. I don't know if you remember that
Prestige
show.
Prestige TV, yeah. essentially. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then he did like 4 episodes of Our Flag Means Death. So like his work is visible. But as a first feature film, I feel like he was worried about overlighting things. I think because he's so used to shooting for TV, he didn't want this to have a TV look at all. So he filmed it. It's a very dark movie, which totally is perfect, actually. And yeah, but I agree that I want something new, something. Once again, I'm struggling with an actual number to put to this, but I think it's a 4. I think it's a 4, and I'm still very interested to see what else he does, because he's going to get more work after this.
Yeah. You guys really do make such a great point about like the A24, and like there's an expectation that you have, and it's always like especially now, maybe not Death of a Unicorn, because that's just something that I haven't heard a lot of great things about at all. But that's like one of those rare exceptions when it comes to the studio putting stuff out, that it feels pretty universal across the board. Like, that's not great. But
it has Will Poulter in it too. So just stay away, Sean. You won't like it.
Oh, yeah. That is an instant. If you guys want to hear more thoughts about Will Poulter, sign up for our Patreon. Patreon.com/experienceground, where for as little as a dollar, you can hear me talk shit about Will Poulter.
We'll find out who everybody's Ed Helms is.
Yes.
I got mine.
And Ryan can't just say Ed Helms, because that is so fucking cheating. But our last category is going to be entertainment value. And Kyle, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, because first time in a category. I'm not giving a 5. Shockingly, even though I am thoroughly entertained, I do have to knock this slightly a bit. I do think it is, number one, as funny as it is, still a bit long in the tooth. And I do think it does have some pacing issues. That said, it is also quite fucking funny at times. And I want to talk about just my favorite absolute bit. Is when he trips on the toad.
Yep.
And it's only like a minute in length. And all I went to fucking Subway. He ordered a sandwich.
He ordered a sandwich from Subway.
That was just so fucking funny throughout. And so absurd.
Toad ripped me off.
How long were you in there? 3-4 months?
Like a minute.
I went to Subway.
Nothing. I do like, though, that he says he didn't get an answer. I think that he did. Because it was, he did see Paul Rudd as an old man, implying that he should still try to work out the friendship somehow and be.
Why was it in a Subway?
Age.
And why was Paul Rudd serving him?
Because he's still
just
a narcissist.
Things to think on.
And
metaphors.
The center of the universe. And we could mention famous.
He's
Patreon
using relationships
matter,
like fast food.
We could. It's a very easy segue to make, but we won't.
But we won't.
And he did something new year, momented with toasting his bread.
That is true. He also did something outside of his comfort zone.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was entertaining. God damn, that scene was funny as hell, though. And I did not see that coming at all.
No.
But All that said, it's a very enthusiastic four from me. I still really like this movie, and I do see myself watching it again and again and laughing a lot. Probably laughing more because I know some more bits coming. When he sinks in the bog for no reason, what the fuck? That shit was great. But
also only like 6 inches and freaking the fuck out.
Freaks out, drops the dropping of the phone as a recurring bit too. I think he loses 3 phones or some shit in this movie. Just, it is, I don't know.
And then
man.
Throws the last one and breaks it.
Immediately. Maybe I will give it a 5. Let's see what you guys say. Ryan, take it.
Man, I kind of want you to stay at a 4 because you've been very 5 heavy this whole time. But
I know, and I feel 4 is earned. I did not, I wanted it to be a little shorter.
I'm honestly, I'm right there with you. I also think this movie is like 5 to 10 minutes too long. I think at like 90-ish, like we're perfect. Mm-hmm. We're golden.
Yep.
And I especially felt it in the second and third act because like this movie is structured weird. You have like the friendship and then the breakup in the first act. And then the whole second and third act is just one long spiral crash out. And it just keeps going. There's no reprieve, no break from it. And I do think it gets a little bit, there are things that could probably be tweaked in there to just like make it a little quicker. I kind of agree with that. That said, I think for me, that's reflected in my direction. And that's where that 4 is going to be. For entertainment, this is, I'm fucking shocked that this is your 4. This is my 1.5. I there you go. This is my 5. I enjoyed the fuck out of this. It made me uncomfortable and then made me lose my shit laughing for like 2 minutes. And I'm crying laughing because I just needed a good laugh. And then like, goddamn, that T-boy scene in the trip, as you point out, just is, I fucking loved it so much. Did you learn your answers? No, I made an order. Like, it's just so profoundly disappointing. Everything in this guy's life. And it just, it's misery porn and it makes me fucking laugh. And it's again, this is a very specific thing it's doing, but it does it so well for me. Yeah. And I think this is where this movie gets to the 5 for me personally. I was entertained. I had a smile throughout. And then also like kind of like a grimace. Smile and grimace. It was a real healthy mixture of both.
It's a good 5. Workout.
Easy 5. Yeah, it's the face kegels. My face is going to be so fucking tight. Kegels. There's like face a term kegels. For it. It's the, is it meowing or there's some stupid mewing? Fucking millennial term for it. Mewing. Mewing. That's it. Kyle's doing it. Uh-huh. It's mewing, not meowing.
Why is that a thing?
Dumb.
To keep your
anyway.
Shit from sagging.
Yeah, so you don't get no double chin or turkey neck. You keep it tight.
That's a fucking badge of honor.
It's a Lucille.
How else am I going to know that you know how to make a good cornbread?
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's actually a use to it.
It keeps flexing. Keeps one of the reasons they pass out because the centrifugal force pulls the blood from your brain. So flexing keeps. They have to like flex and learn to breathe while constantly flexing.
I would have loved to seen in Top Gun Maverick fucking everybody doing that face the whole movie. Just Tom Cruise is flying around. Just... All right. Entertainment value. Brian.
I'm thoroughly entertained. I enjoyed my time with this movie actually quite a bit because it was a roller coaster of no, don't do that. Oh, this is hilarious. Ha ha ha. Oh God, that's the worst thing you could have done in that situation. Also hilarious. I agree. It could have been 10 minutes shorter. And, lost my complete train of thought there. It's a 5. It's a 5. Nice. Sean, bring us home.
Craig's ability to really only have 2 volumes, if you will, 0 and 14, like just absolutely over the top, is insane.
Welcome to Tim Robinson.
I cannot believe that I said 14 and then remembered I could not believe that he while in this hostage situation, makes a comment about this dude's daughter with the large breasts.
Like a busty daughter and everyone's staring at her.
It's like, she's 13. Like, I was like, there's times in this movie where I laughed and I was like, I should not have laughed at that. Like, that was not okay. And I think that speaks volumes for this movie because, man, yeah, it went a little long, but also at the same time, it, for me, it felt like it went about the right length. I wish it was shorter, but that's just because of how uncomfortable I was the whole fucking time. But at the end of the day, I thought it was like the right length for me. I was fighting between not wanting to look at the screen and also just not being able to take my eyes off of it. And so I think it really did it for me. And this is going to be a 5 from me as well. This movie's just fucking ridiculous.
My train of thought caught back up to me, and it was at the end of this movie, I still said, what the hell did I just watch?
Yeah. I love it when it's something like that. And something that I feel like if I were to think about this movie for the next couple of days, I probably will. And I will probably put myself trying to figure out the way that his brain works. And like something we didn't bring up was his nosebleeds and what the causes of those are. Is there a concern of maybe he's got like something that could be going on here is maybe he has like a brain tumor or something that could absolutely do something like this, which is crazy considering what happened with Tammy. Like there's just so many underlying things that like... Or is it a release of all of that stress and pressure? There's so much that I love a movie that I'll think about it for a couple of days and just try to be figuring out what the fuck did I just watch. Like, if I could compare this movie to a SEAL Team 6 lunch that cost 22,000 calories, had 4 racks of ribs, some mac and cheese, and a Caesar salad.
I probably
eat like 17,000 calories.
This
of that,
is what they ate know? After they killed Bin Laden.
He has a pic of the Situation Room in his garage next to his drum set. Did you see that? That was so fucking great. God, that was so good.
Oh my God.
So, I also like that he got the green drum set to match Austin's guitar, which was orange.
I
don't know how true that is, but one of the IMDb facts said that could be a nod that he's colorblind.
Interesting.
They let anybody on IMDb now, huh?
I guess they always have. They do, really. So take that with the grain of salt.
Any other things in this movie that could also, you know, collaborate that? Whereas it's just like everything else in this movie, anything that he does or that he has a different reason for who he's trying to impress.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Mr. Connor, nuts. Whatever your name is, that's looking for the bathroom. Yeah, it's just, it's 70.
People are losing their minds.
Brian, you have been tracking these scores. And a big part of entertainment value is the scores and the box office and stuff.
Yeah.
And would you mind going over that stuff and how our score would compare to, you know, the people who are right, like the Rotten Tomatoes.
The people who are right. Don't ever say Rotten Tomatoes is right.
Okay. The IMDb people.
This one actually had quite a range, anywhere from 68 to 87, depending on where you're looking. IMDb gave this the 6.8 out of 10. Metacritic a 72. Letterboxd is a 3.5, so that's a 70. The Rotten Tomatoes 73 audience, but 87% critical. So the critics like this a lot more than the audience, which is surprising when you're talking about a Tim Robinson sketch.
Mm. He is kind of like the it boy in comedy right now. If you point to anybody as like kind of like the next up and comer, who else is there?
Shane Gillis.
That was my only thought.
Two different ends of the spectrum. So
yeah. Mm-hmm.
The comedy spectrum, guys. I wasn't making a Shane Gillis joke.
Okay. Know what's weird about IMDb, boys? It says that it's 6.8 out of 10.
Yeah.
But let's be real. It's like 6.8 out of 8.5. These mother... 8.
That's
7,
true. They're so hard on everything.
Their upper ceiling is like an 8.7 out of anything.
IMDb's the worst. IMDb's the one where you can really see the racism and misogyny fly. That's absolutely the one where you pull up a black or a movie starring a female or any kind of like non-white... let's just say non-Jason Statham movie. It's going to be under 5.
Oh, you got a problem with me there?
I totally have a problem with Jason Statham. No, I don't.
Anyway, the total that we arrived at, it was 88. So we're a little bit above the critics and everybody else.
It is official. We are now critics, boys.
Nope. You're changing
one of my points.
Up or down?
Up. I don't. No, down. I'll take away one of the fives.
Oh, I thought you were going to actually give a 5 to entertainment value.
I can't have this be like an 88. It needs to be an 87.
Yeah, or an 89. One of the two.
That's so weird.
I'll give
weird.
Entertainment a 5.
Why can't it be an 88?
We'll get into it later.
Do you got something against Dale Earnhardt Jr.?
No.
Oh,
or Dale Jarrett?
Is it another sports person?
No.
Okay. I'm pretty sure it's a bad number.
Yeah.
Yep. That is not a good
now
number.
Now we're getting there. Now we're getting there.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's a Nazi number.
There we go.
Oh.
There it is.
88 words or something. Yeah. Yeah.
No. So. It's 80.
We gave it an 89 officially.
There we go. 89. Let's go. So, woo.
A little bit higher than the critics and a lot bit higher than the rest of the audience.
The confusion on Ryan's face as a smile just slowly grows.
I learned a lot in the last few minutes. That I did not know.
It like slowly dawned on me what was happening too. I was like, "Wait, okay, what?"
Okay.
But cool. That is now I have not to reconsider cool. Why Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s number. Anyway.
All right. Okay. That was fantastic. I appreciate you guys going along on that journey with us. I feel like
I regret the last 10 minutes.
Kind of like this movie, no.
I feel okay. So the next episode is going to be a little weird because a handful of us have prior life commitments. Uh-huh. So I think we'll leave that in the air. What comes out? Awesome. Big thumbs up. It's going to be great. But we do have bonus stuff. I alluded to it earlier. You can head on over to patreon.com/experiencegrind and get bonus episodes, which we are about to go and record one for this week, right following this. You can also find that on our Linktree, which also has our Discord link on there. So Linktree/experiencegrind. If you're not there, why not? But I'll leave you guys with this. We should still be in Afghanistan. I don't know why we got pulled out like we did. Until next week.
I want to fucking throw away bit, dude.
Stay curious.